I arrived a little late. I took a moment to go into the library and look at the four quartets again. And Eliot's description of words as a raid on the inarticulate. Shabby, imprecise instruments. I'm going to give the talk that I planned. It struck me in meeting for worship this morning that what we're all trying to do is find our way to the centre of our gathered meeting and live from that silent place. And anything else is just words. But I've got two quotes to start with. One by Christina Baldwin, which says, "Spirituality is a commitment to being different in our hearts and minds and actions. Spiritual practice is the only way we can discover what difference our spirituality makes. Without practice, spirituality is just an intellectual exercise, a puzzle about the universe we find interesting. When we accept these practices, we move from the intellect to the heart and commit ourselves to making active spiritual choices in thought, word, and deed, rather than simply knowing something about the topic." And the second one is one I particularly like, from Walter Wink. "The world is, to a degree at least, the way we imagine it. When we think it to be godless and soulless, it becomes for us precisely that. And we ourselves are then made over into the image of godless and soulless selves. If we want to be made over into the image of God, to become what God created us to be, then we need to purge our souls of materialism and other world views that block us from realizing the life God so eagerly wants us to have." That second quote is very important to me, because partly, as I think, as a result of following spiritual practice and starting that journey that Jay described so beautifully, a few years ago I had a vision of God's love cascading through the universe. It cascaded ceaselessly, endlessly, bountifully. It was available for you and for me. That vision informs my life subsequently. And where my life does not accord with that vision, I think it's for me to put myself in right ordering with it, rather than try and explain it away or diminish its power. So this talk comes with at least three health warnings. Firstly, because I'm standing here and you're sitting there, the arrangement suggests I have something to say to you which is more valuable than anyone sitting in the hall. So let me say, but last time I discussed in detail my spiritual practice in a small group, I found I was a mere child. There were people who'd been there for 20, 30 years, undertaking sustained spiritual practice. And they had infinitely richer practices and greater, far greater experience than I had. The second health warning is that although I've been asked to speak about spiritual practice, I'm really interested in religious discipline. And I'm very aware what a heavy authoritarian phrase this is for our 21st century. The word religion comes from the same Latin root as the word ligature. It means to bind. My religious discipline binds me. It binds me firstly to myself, my deepest, truest self, where I am grounded. And ironically, when I am grounded, in that mysterious, paradoxical way which is characteristic of all religious experience, my words and actions emanate from a deeper source than myself. They become more authentic, more vital, and more grounded in love. Also, my discipline binds me to God, the source of my being. What do I mean by God? Well, I found no better description than one offered in a little book by the Kindlers called Journeying to the Heartlands. Quakers have called this presence in meeting the divine, the light, truth, reality, presence, the source, even God. But this is no God made in our image of punishment and guilt. It is a healing power, a creative energy that has birthed us, totally accepts us, unfolding an abundance of life for us, desiring that we should be made whole. This power is as intimate to us as breath and blood. It is intrinsically within us as we, and all things are in its embrace. So for some of us, this is not a metaphor or a linguistic formulation or even an irrelevance. It's a great, quiet power, which is our source, a definition of who we are. Our whole lives are lived in and through this power. And this hasn't always been the case for me. That's another story. Finally, my discipline binds me to my community. The community, which is the society of friends at all levels. My local meeting, my area meeting, the friends I meet in national work, my friends around the world. And all those are friends with capital F. When I encounter these friends, we create, for however brief a time, the beloved community. In this beloved community, I am enriched, developed, instructed. I'm bound to these friends in a web which is the kingdom of heaven in action. I say I'm instructed because I need to learn. And when I engage with my friends at a deep level, I learn from their struggles, their yearnings, their hopes and their desires. I learn about myself and my deepest self. I learn what it is to be fully human. Which is when we are fully human that we live in the kingdom. It is the Latin word for learner which gives rise to our word disciple, a follower. And as a follower, I need to develop a discipline, a regular way, a path to follow. So, what is it that I do, and what have I found by trial and error to be my path to follow? What are the things that help me grow in the light? And I suppose this is the third health warning. These may be of little significance to you. Faith and practice frequently reminds us that we need to understand and accept that another's path may not be our own. One of my most helpful insights was in a book by Cyprian Smith called The Way of Paradox. In this I read a description of my path, and therefore could understand and accept what kind of seeker I was. So armed with this insight, I gained a greater understanding into what tools would help me on my journey, and by trial and error, I've learned what things suit the unique configuration of genes and personal experience, of interests and characteristics, that is who I am. I journal. For a long time I called this my book a spiritual discipline, because the idea of journaling seemed too feminine. But whatever we call it, quite regularly, most days of the week and at the start of the day, I write about what is deepest in my heart, what is happening to me, and what is happening to those around me. It's taken me several years and a number of different trials to learn how to journal in a way that's effective for me. I have adopted several styles of journaling, and I now find I can employ a different one at different times, on different occasions, for different purposes. I have learned to sit still. I listen to my breath and allow my thoughts to be stilled. For a very long time, a very, very long time, I found this practice to be difficult. Like many others, I read Thich Nhat Hanh and found him inspirational. But in my case, I was quite unable to settle. I then read a book called Into the Silent Land by Martin Legg, which I think is on the corner there. It's about the breath in Christian practice. And suddenly it all made sense. Try to become the mountain, not the clouds hiding the mountain. Or in my case, the wind whipping the mountaintop. So now, I regularly give myself time to breathe. On one occasion, I was in a conversation with a friend who needed to consult her computer about our conversation. And she switched on the computer. It was a little slow. And she was quite impatient, wanting to attend to me in the conversation. And I found myself saying, "These moments are opportunities for prayer." As soon as I said that, I knew I was speaking to myself, not to her. So now, if I'm in front of the computer and it's taking its time, or I switch on the computer and I'm waiting for it to warm up, I simply sit and wait and try and turn that time over to God. I'm quite fortunate that I no longer have a regular job of work to attend to. I can walk regularly, even in winter, by the magnificent seascape near our house. If it's not too cold or too windy, I try a particular meditative technique. I sit on a particular bench on the walk and look at a particular rock and try and focus on that rock and the lapping waves. I try and do that to the exclusion of everything else. One practice I do not do regularly enough is to journal my gratitude. I know it is valuable and helpful, and I know it helps me to be more grounded when I take just a few minutes to review the day or a stretch of time and take time to appreciate those things to which I am utterly grateful. And yet, although I know I'm richer for it, I've not managed to incorporate this into a regular discipline. I don't worry about this, but wait patiently until the time is right for this practice to develop and to strengthen. Another practice I do not do regularly enough is Lectio Divina, using faith and practice or Bible readings, and yet again I know that when I've done it, it's been a source of great power, great insight. I live in Wales and there's a wonderful Welsh Assembly initiative about trying to promote health, and I'm part of this exercise programme where I go to my local gym. I'm trying to develop my practice so that when I sit on an exercise bike or when I sit on the rowing machine, I'm entirely in my body, not in my head, not at the TV that's blaring away on the corner, but entirely in my body. These things I do in quiet solitude. My religious discipline is not always a silent and solitary occupation. My local meeting has an experiment with light group, which both enriches the life of the meeting as well as the individual lives who participate. And you can find a description of this among the articles about Experiment with Light that appeared in A Friend last year. I've learnt I need to take regular refreshment by standing aside from my usual life and undertaking a course or retreat. I'm grateful for the existence of Woodbrook. I've recently finished the Equipping for Ministry course, and part of this was to take 6 courses over 2 years. Among many, many, many other things it taught me, that I need to ensure to take at least 1 course each year to deepen my understanding, enrich my sense of purpose, and to meet other seekers. On one very memorable occasion, I took a private retreat. I simply organised it myself. It's a study centre near me. I find Quaker work to be a very powerful spiritual discipline. I've written about this in Quaker Voices at an earlier time, so I'm not going to spend a long time on it today. But this year all my appointments have come to an end, and I've asked my local meeting and my area meeting not to seek to appoint me, allow me a year of reflection. But over the years I've undertaken a number of roles, and I've found that if I'm faithful, I'm truly faithful in a Quaker role, and don't take it on because I'm flattered, because I've been asked, or because I think the work is there so somebody's got to do it, it'd better be me. If I'm really faithful, that work can take me deep into the heart of a Quaker experience and deepen my capacity for discernment. It becomes then not a job of work, a burden to be endured. It's a source of enrichment and learning about our society, how we can corporately discern with great power and effect. I learn about myself and my own capacities and gifts and how they might be used. And I learn about the gifts of other people. And I also learn about the light working in ordinary lives, deepening and transforming them and the situations around them. What's the point of all this for me? Why do I undertake these activities which I call my religious disciplines? For the same reason that a Buddhist undertakes her or his practices so carefully and thoroughly and methodically. I wish to be transformed. I undertake these practices for the same reason that a Muslim prays 5 times a day, in order to be close to God. How would I phrase this for myself? I would say I seek to make myself a channel for that divine love which lies at the beating heart of our world, a conduit for that abundance of love which I have seen cascading through the universe, endlessly and ceaselessly, and yet needs us to pour it into the world. When I'm skillful and grounded and acting under concern, I'm not merely an empty vessel channeling this love into the universe, but an active co-agent, helping God to remake the world in His image, not as we humans have made it, through our own distorted lens of perception. In writing about the Gospel of Mark, the American theologian Ched Myers says, in constructing his alternative order, Mark offers not fantasy but transformed reality. The kingdom was a laborious project to be undertaken by human disciples in the real world. I wish to be one of those disciples. Francis Haugill says it slightly differently, and I will pause if I find this difficult to read aloud. I always find this difficult to read aloud without a catch in my voice. These were poor people in 1652. They were oppressed. They'd just gone through a civil war. And suddenly, life made sense and was meaningful for them. The kingdom of heaven did gather us and catch us all as in a net, and his heavenly power at one time drew many hundreds to land. We came to know a place to stand in and what to wait in. And the Lord appeared daily to us to our astonishment, amazement, and great admiration, insomuch that we often said one to another with great joy of heart, "What, is the kingdom of God come to be with men? And will he take up his tabernacle among the sons of men, as he did of old?" I feel my practices take me to the heart of that experience.